Good morning. Today is Tuesday, April the 24th. Joining us this morning, interim city manager. Have you put your hat in the ring?
Not yet. There's no ring yet to put that hat in.
Merritt Perry. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Comments about turnover.
Well,
I mean, Mark was here last. Now, I didn't realize he was being him and his buddy Bill. We're both here. And things happened later on that day. It was a little bit of a stunner, at least, you know, out in the general public. Was this something that you guys were expecting, or was this?
I don't think it's something that was expected. The previous city manager, Mark Wheatley, he made a decision to resign, and so I think the council accepted that resignation, and that's where I came in. They needed somebody to fill in the gap, and I've been at the city for a while, and I thought I had the ability to do it. So
you know where all the doors lead?
I know where all the doors lead, yeah.
We had one here yesterday. One of our IT guys was here, and the building we're in, our studios, was built over three expansions, if you will. Three different attics that don't connect. And he was trying to figure it out because, you know, it looks like it flows now. But if you know what you're looking at, it's different buildings. So he was kind of a little befuddled about why, where. Same thing I would imagine, you know, for somebody new stepping in that wasn't familiar with the city. You know, who, where, why, how, huh?
Right. Yeah, well, I have the fortunate background of being a public works director and city engineer, so I have a good sense of what we're doing with water and wastewater and streets, and I review the development projects that come in along with the community development department, so that's a big part of it. The one part that I'm not used to working with that I've had a little exposure to since being named the interim is working with the police department. So that's a new area. I haven't done a lot of work, but the rest of it I'm pretty familiar with.
Well, in a situation like this where you're either bridging to the next guy or you are the next guy, but it's not a determined situation. How involved do you want to get with some of these departments that are fairly well established? I mean, you know, Chief Bill's been around for a while. You've been around for a while. I mean, you guys and staff, you know, it's a day-to-day job. Yeah. Well, they're doing the day-to-day stuff, you know, I mean, as far as a city manager overlord kind of a thing. How much day-to-day influence is there?
Yeah, I don't consider it so much of an overlord position.
I'm reading a book about Camelot, so it's like, oh, this is, you know.
I see it more like a caretaker position, and I'm trying to think about, okay,
sure,
what's the council going to want to do? You know, they're going to have some choices to go after recruitment real aggressively and spend some money, or maybe take a little bit of time and try to look around locally. And what I want to try to do is get it as cleaned up as I can for the next guy and play more of a caretaker role. And so whenever something, you know, becomes obvious to me, hey, this is not consistent with policy, how do we deal with it? You know, this is, you know, there's a liability issue here we have to deal with, those sort of things. Just take those on, you know, tackle those so the next guy coming isn't like a deer in the headlights and, you know, has
well, you
a
don't
huge
want to
amount
set
of
him
projects.
Up.
Right.
You know, because even if you're set, if someone has that predilection, well, you're really setting the city up. You're setting up the citizens. You're not setting up the next person.
Right.
Because that's where the impact is. It's out there. Are there a lot of things to be addressed other than developing budget?
It's amazing. You think, you know, being a city manager or an interim city manager, it's mundane and people come in and, you know, you review timesheets and it's really simple. But every day there are new things that pop up, whether somebody trips on a sidewalk, you know, whether there's other some human resources or personnel issue. Those consume a lot of time, and they also present a huge liability. And so, you know, I don't know if you've noticed, but people like to sue governmental agencies.
Yeah, I've heard that's a trend these days. Yes.
So thinking about how you protect the city from liability as well as manage the city's assets. The city has some buildings that we want to transition out of this, you know, city ownership. You know, the old Parlato's restaurant at 320 Main. We have a thriving business there, Double D Steakhouse, and that's a building that the city would like to sell. There's, you know, that was one of the goals of having that property is to see a successful business. So how can we make that happen?
That was
quickly?
The caretaker role. What Reagan set up?
Yeah, that the city acquired that when Curly's went out of business, and they had given him a business loan. And then after that, there was, I think it was, I forgot what the name of the business was, but it was a former Avalon owner who came in.
Springville something.
Springville Steak. Thank you. And then Double D's is in there now, and they've been doing a great job, and they've been busy. It's exactly what the city wants to see in that building and in that type of business in the city. So, you know, at this point, it doesn't make sense for the city to own it. When you have somebody who may be interested, why have a building that you have to take care of when there's an owner who's running a successful business? So now's a good time for the city to sell that and to give somebody that opportunity.
Yeah, it was something, I mean, we can talk about the specifics of this one if we, if it works for us, Merritt. The city isn't in the position to be landlord, leaseholder in for private sector. So when that money comes back that you guys purchased the building with, does that get reinvested into another economic development, or does it go back into a general fund where it can be allocated to other issues?
So you have to look at where the money came from to pay for the building in the first place. So we have a small business revolving loan fund, which there's no more money coming into that. So it's sort of a relic. So the sale of that building would go back into that small business loan fund, and then the city would have the ability to loan that to another small business trying to start up. So
it's kind of like a mini redeck.
It's like a mini redeck. Although there's nothing else coming into it, those funds that came in the past, we still have an opportunity to do something good with and a responsibility to do that. We can't just take them and put them in the general funds, as appealing as that might be to, you know, help out our general fund budget. But it's a good opportunity to maybe help a new business.
Can you set up something akin to the facade grant program that the state took away? Or, I mean, it's probably not enough money to worry about, but to be able to do that with. But
you know, I haven't thought about that. I think what the city would really want to see is how can we make those dollars go the furthest?
Exactly.
Whether it's a facade to make more business happen or to support a new business coming in.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music, ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio, easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music, easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Merritt Perry, Interim City Manager for the City of Fortuna. Budgets. I bet you that just makes your heart go pitter-patter, huh?
pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you look at it as numbers, if you're not a numbers guy, you know, like for me, I would be like, oh, man, are you kidding me? I would be focusing on what do we get to do this year? And having fun on that side, and then can we afford it? You know, keep whatever the ratio numbers are, fine. You know, the department heads, that's your guys' responsibility. Punch it out. Tell me what stuff we can do, and let's make sure we're kind of on that five-year plan. How do you go about budget control and budget intake from all these various departments that aren't necessarily yours? In fact, they may be competing for that same general fund dollar that, you know, the home front would like to have also. How do you go through that one?
You know, I this is something that our finance director really put some boundaries around and some when we were developing our budgets. And it's pretty nice to have a little bit of guidance from your finance director. So, you know, the city right now, we have general funds revenue of about $5.2 million, and we have expenses of about $5.3 to $5 million, if you're not counting the general fund revenue that comes from Measure E, which is about another $1.4 million. So, you know,
and that's kind of treated as dessert?
It's kind of treated as separate with the understanding that the city council really wants to have accountability for those extra dollars that are coming in from that sales tax measure. Although it's a general revenue tax and is part of the general fund, we're tracking it separately so we can report back to the community. Here's where this money's going that you approved and trusted us with as a part of that sales tax measure that passed.
Separate tracking, Merritt, makes sense, but it sounds like it might be more detailed than what the other elements of the budget are? Is that
we
accurate?
Just track it as a separate fund. That way, okay, when people are looking at the general fund, one of the items will be in that Measure E summary is a general fund budget, general fund shortfall of what we'd have without Measure E. And so it's a way for people to look at our general fund budget and say, okay, how are we tracking for when Measure E perhaps goes away and we don't have that in another 7 years? You know, what's the reality of our financial situation?
So how does the city, you know, and I know saying the electeds is going to be a cop-out, so I'm not going to let you do that one. How does the city determine to set aside a percentage of that, or not to set aside a percentage of those special funds for the period so that you don't come up to the edge and if it gets turned down, all of a sudden there's this dramatic reduction in services, at least so it can be tapered off so that perhaps sales, you know, the old mill site is happening and bringing money into the equation, that it transitions smoothly and it's not seen as, oh my, what happened?
You know, I think the council, in a desire to be open and upfront and to hear what the community's input is, they appointed an advisory committee. So we call it the Measure E Advisory Committee. So they take a look at the different projects that – so let me back up. So staff, we did a little bit of public outreach. We had public meetings with the Measure E Committee to hear from the public. They came forward with a few ideas. And then staff develops their project and budget ideas for consideration. So we bring all those to a committee meeting and we kind of hash those out. It's a long list. Some of those might
kind of like a brainstorming kind of a style,
it's really,
or more
just
formalized.
It's really
that?
Just a request. And at a staff level, we tried to keep our requests and the public requests that we received by the committee fairly close, within $100,000 or $200,000 of the $1.4 million. So the committee doesn't have $10 million of projects to look at, but we tried to really pare that down to what staff's recommendation was, and considering the projects from the public. I think the way that to answer your question, I think the way that we determine how much goes back to the general fund reserve, the committee looks at all of those projects and says, okay, is this kind of a need? Is this something that we really have to have, or is important or consistent with the intention of Measure E? And then, the answer is yes or no. This is something that we really have to have. And then, whatever's left, just put a lump sum towards general fund reserve.
So it does end up in the reserve for that.
Yeah. And
potential.
And I think they try to balance it. I mean, the intention of Measure E was to really, first of all, shore up the general fund deficit and make sure that we're not in a deficit situation, to provide recreation opportunities. Public safety was one of the bigger parts of Measure E, provide more police. Measure E is funding a problem-oriented policing officer and another detective position. It took one of our community services officer positions from part-time to full-time and funded a trainee position. Someone who would presumably train at CR and then come on as a full-time officer once they're completed with that program. So that
kind of really, a development program.
Yeah, the police really saw a big kind of bump, and that's not including the positions that come from the county's Measure Z funds, which provide a school resource officer and a drug task force officer. So the police have done pretty well with both of those sales tax measure, and I think that's something that the citizens really wanted to see. That was, we heard loud and clear, they wanted more police protection.
So if there is a bump in sales tax or something so that there's some unencumbered dollars,
mm-hmm.
What is the process for those dollars to be assimilated into the budget? Is it next year's budget and it's factored in? Is it this year's budget and maybe you go one more chunk down on the list that maybe you couldn't afford before, now that next project is addressed? How does that work?
Well, I think you identify what you're going to spend and what you're not, and money that you put aside and don't allocate towards an expense goes right to the general fund reserve with the understanding that it's going to shore up the general fund.
KINS, News and Information Times, 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS. News and Information Times, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Merritt Perry, interim city manager of Fortuna. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, American Ag, and by Lolita Cheese. Merritt, as we're looking at some of the different options that are out there, budgets I know are supposed to be like roadmaps. Okay, general guidance, not nailed down specific. How on target is the current budget?
You know, we come in pretty close. Our operating budgets, our department heads have been doing this for a long time. And, you know, we look at those pretty closely. We get a monthly report every month of what our budget versus actual is. And we know what our personnel costs are, which are the biggest expense that the city has. So barring something unforeseen, like a disaster or something that could come in and require a pretty significant infrastructure investment, We do pretty well at tracking very close to budget. And
so there's a lot of reassurance and confidence that the budget is something you can not take to the bank necessarily, something that you can rely upon to be pretty accurate.
We don't see wild swings unless there's something like a lawsuit and a settlement that may have an impact, or, you know, a big piece of equipment breaks down that could be a few $100,000 potentially.
Or a new retailer comes to town.
Or a new retailer. Those are the kind that we like.
Yeah.
And the last, you know, looking at the last mid-year estimate that they did in January, we were coming in slightly higher, I think about $20,000 on the projected sales tax.
Good. That's going to make some planning somewhere in some park kind of cool stuff.
Yeah. And so, we like to see those kind of changes from the budget on the revenue side for sure, especially when they're in the positive.
What are some of those projects that are out there that would really make things happen nicely? I know that was it public safety building, police? I don't know what, you know, the old Fortuna Motors. You know, that thing is sitting there. I know there's lots of plans for it. If that was online right now, would that make things a whole lot smoother for the city?
You know, I think there's a few big projects that are coming in. I'm not sure if you're asking about development projects or community public facilities, but two projects underway that I think you may be aware of. One is the Gene Lucas Community Center, which is being done by the McLean Foundation. That's going to be huge. It's going to give a home to the multi-generational center. It's going to give an office to McLean, another beautiful building to hold events and other things at. So that's going to be a really big change, and they've already broken ground. They've done the grading on the site, and they're going to get started with the building soon. So that's a really big one, and it's going to be a nice addition to Newburgh Park.
Whenever you hear things going on,
yeah,
I mean, hammers and big boy toys moving around, it's like, yeah, all of a sudden now it becomes almost a tourist attraction for everybody in town.
It's looking gorgeous. That surrounds Newburgh Park. And one of the other things that we did recently was we put in a grant. The McLean Foundation agreed to sell the city about 8 acres to the southerly side of Newburgh Park, which we're hoping to increase the ball fields. There's been requests
down towards the creek?
Exactly, between the existing Newburgh Park and the creek. And so we applied for a Land and Water Conservation Fund grant to purchase that property with the McLean Foundation as a willing seller. And what our hope is that we could bring in some more soccer fields or potentially other types of ball fields, and then have a facility where we could host more tournaments, bring people in from outside, stay in the hotels. And, you know, right now we're just getting the first piece, which will be let's get the property under control and then figure out how we can finance the construction of some fields.
Weed whack it and see what you find.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's pretty flat. As part of the McLean Foundation's project, the Gene Lucas Community Center, they graded the site, so it's going to come to us pretty flat and level. Oh. And so we hope that we can keep the development costs pretty low to get some ball fields in there.
The fact that the creek is there, is that a significant issue, or is that just a kind of a nice compliment?
I'd say
to the property.
I think it's a nice compliment. The city has a general plan policy which requires a 50-foot setback from creeks and wetlands, and so it won't be. It's not going to take up a significant portion of that parcel, and we expect to be able to put some walking trails in there so people could walk around the outside of that area if we end up acquiring it, and have a nice trail in addition to some ball fields. So it would be allow for some mixed use.
Who owns the property on the other side with the neat old building that just is in sad shape?
I think Danco owns that. And so we haven't really looked at that for anything, but that's privately owned and not something.
Drove by last week and it was like, oh man, that's just such a cool old building. And if you're familiar with the area, it's just kind of over the years, you could tell at one point it was a neat place, a family, and it's just things have changed over the decades, and it's
nice old two-story home, probably
needs a little TLC.
Something years old.
Yeah.
I've heard that referred to as Kasakis Corner.
Kasakis Corner.
Yeah, so I don't know where that comes from, but
a little something. I'm just going to have to go phonetically with it.
So other projects that we're looking at, I'm sure you're aware of the Open Door Community Health Center that they should be up and running, I believe, this year in 2018. They're getting closer and closer every day on that building and checking things off their list. And they have a great project manager, Laura Kadlicek, who just is right on top of that project and keeping things on schedule. So she's keeping us on our toes to get the approvals and recorded easements and things like that. So that's going to be an incredible facility to have in the city and a really important one for the public.
How much difference? I mean, you've mentioned a couple different projects. To have somebody as a project manager working with whoever the contact is at the city to have a perception of a partnership rather than a confrontation.
You know, I think it's really important and something that we strive to do. Everybody who's doing any kind of development project in the city, whether it's a public facility or a private business, everybody comes in with a different perspective on how the city's going to treat them. And I think what's important for the city to do is say, okay, how can we, you know, take a look at their project first and, you know, make sure that it's consistent with the city, you know, land use, the land use designation and zoning and things that the council has put forward as kind of a roadmap. And then once you can kind of check that box, okay, and say, yeah, this is consistent with the city's general plan, how can we support them to move this forward? You know, and I think having an attitude of how can we be the most helpful, how can we explain and show people how to get things done rather than just tell them that these are the requirements, it's really important, because that communication, that, you know, if you can add to the communication what the steps are rather than just throwing a pile of paperwork at them and really coming to a consensus, it allows a developer to be more efficient with the process. It allows them to do a project with less submittals, that takes less engineering time, less permitting time. And so communication from the city can make a really big difference to a developer. And we've had some great examples of projects coming in really quickly and going really smoothly. One was a grocery outlet building. They had an extremely short timeline for their building permit review. And it just seemed like we got the building permit in, and the next thing you knew, they were up and running. And Open Door was another one. We had a really tight timeline to complete a subdivision and get the conditions to them, and that went really quickly. So we were able to, you know, make sure that facility came to the city.
KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:43.
The Redwood Region Economic Development Commission and Fly Humboldt remind you that flying local is buying local and supports local jobs and investment. Fly Humboldt is a community-based coalition of businesses, organizations, and citizens dedicated to getting more flights to more destinations. We know that reliable and affordable air service is a critical part of a healthy community. For more information, visit flyhumboldt.org or find us on Facebook.
Good morning. KINS News and Information Times, 8:48. We're back to talk shop this morning with Merritt Perry, interim city manager for Fortuna. Merritt, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the culture of economic development. Yeah, how do you do that with folks who, in many other jurisdictions throughout the country, may not have the feeling that that's any of concern of theirs at all? How do you infuse that into your departments?
You know, I think you just have to make it a part of your culture, like you say. And when you look at development, you need to look at it as a positive thing, particularly, you know, when it is consistent with the general plan. It, you know, it's looking at hey, we've got this area, it's identified for this purpose, and how can we support people coming in to do that? It's part of a grand plan that you have, or a general plan, and how can we support, you know, whether it's home builders or whether it's businesses, how can we support them to come in and fill in these pieces of this puzzle that we put to, that we've identified in the general plan? And so having that attitude of what can we do to help those businesses or home builders come in and try to explain to them the requirements so they understand what you're going to be asking for if they want to do this project, or, you know, what's your read on how the planning commission or council may perceive this project and what conditions will they put on it, trying to predict the future for them and what those things are so that they can put together a real budget with costs that they can control. I think that's one of the best things that we can do.
I would think that having a vibrant city would be a sign of pride for city staff.
Absolutely. Seeing new businesses come in and want to locate in the city is huge. It's the best compliment that somebody can pay you, is to invest their dollars into your city and to make a nice new facility. And we've been real lucky in that regard lately, as we do have new businesses coming in. And I think it's something that, you know, the city is really proud of and that we want to see more of.
So you made it through, survived the first show. Next time we'll talk about what's going on at the old mill site.
All right.
All righty. Thanks, bud.
Thank you.
See everybody tomorrow.